every organization has these stories of people when they show up at their best. All we do is capture what those stories are and deconstruct, well, what are the character attributes? What are the value system attributes that go into making that story great, retellable? And Sam, and a shining example of what a great employee can be for this organization. And we just share those stories so that people understand when we're at our best, usually when stuff is happening, like, you know, a crisis or something like that is actually showing up, that's when our real character shows. So by capturing those stories and retelling those stories, we begin to understand the value system that sits behind those things. And sometimes we can actually then identify, here's the top three values that we have within this organization.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Stephen Morris, brand and culture building expert, author, speaker, and also the CEO of Matter Consulting, Inc. He helps business leaders build unignorable brands, cultures, and businesses through his work as an advisor, author, and speaker. When Stephen is not supporting leaders and building beautiful brands and businesses, he explores his wholehearted participation with life as an artist, surfer, motorcyclist, and lastly, a beekeeper. Stephen, welcome to the show.
Sam, thanks so much. Pleasure to be here with you and hang out, spend some time together, and maybe share a little bit of wisdom and even maybe talk about bees and where we want to go with it.
Wherever we want to go with this conversation today. Yes, I definitely want to talk before this is over. That's a hobby. It's a hard hobby, but we won't get into that yet. I want to hear about that before this is over, though. Stephen, there's three questions I ask every person who comes on this show. Can you quickly tell us, where did you start? Where are you now? And how did you get there?
So where did I start? You know, it's fast forward from beyond the womb and all that kind of thing and go into my professional career. I came into the industry, and my industry as I came up out of graduate school was the agency world. So it was the world of marketing, branding, advertising, that kind of thing. In 1994, my wife and I were 1 year married, literally in a Ryder truck, driving cross country to San Diego, to a city where I knew no one. And I started my business at that point, and over 23 years, built it, grew it, and sold it in 2017, so I could go off and do the work that I'm doing right now, which is, per the bio that you read, is consulting work for businesses around brand, business strategy, and culture. So it's the fusion of those three things. And so what I realized, that, you know, a bit of a turning point for me back in 2013, I did a time assessment of how I was spending most of my days. And most of it, unfortunately, was not in what I call my zone of genius. And it was at that point that I set the business up to sell it, and did so in 2017 to go off and do this work that I'm doing right now, which enlivens every part of my life and challenges me in great and deeply steep learning curve types of ways.
Talk to us about that kind of epiphany. And you said I wasn't working within my zone of genius. You said you moved to San Diego in 94.
Mm-hmm, that's right.
And then 2013, you had this epiphany. So that's 19 years of working outside of your zone of genius. What was the turning point? What was the moment where you said, wait, not doing the thing maybe I could do best?
Yeah. So I came into the industry as what we call as a creative. So in the agency world, you either come up as either a writer or as a, you know, as a designer, as a creative. And I came in as a creative, and I learned when I founded my business, I learned how to be a business person, all the stuff that you need to know about, you know, the operations, the financial management, business development, building systems and processes, HR systems and processes, you know, managing people, being a leader in cultivating new business. And much of that I absolutely loved, and I've got the mindset for that kind of thing. But the reality, the epiphany was I was spending most of my time what I call adult babysitting. And this is really managing the expectations of my, you know, 30 plus team members, and then, you know, running strategy for my clients. My zone of genius is in ideation and helping businesses and individuals realize their own potential through their own self-defined purpose. And while some of that was integral to part of the work that we were doing in the agency, it was mostly a marketing agency. So we were working with companies like Samsung and LG and Amazon, and, you know, a lot of work in consumer products, consumer electronics. And that isn't purpose-oriented work. It's marketing work, and it's putting products out for, you know, in front of people so that they can make a decision that's best for them and their lifestyle. While I loved it, my zone of genius is in that creative realm to help people really understand what drives them, what makes them tick, what motivates them as individuals. And then how do they infuse that, not just in their life, but in their work and in the fusion of the two?
That is very, very interesting. Give us some practical examples maybe of what that means, because, you know, that to me is, it's ethereal in its own right. So can you give us kind of some outworking of that? What does that mean, practically speaking?
Yeah. So if we land the plane on this and we think about, I think the world has enough businesses that exist just for the intent of making money and lots of money and profit and more profit, more profit. So if you think about the purpose for any business, it's to improve the state or the state of being for a set of customers. So those customers could be B2B customers or B2C customers or any number of, you know, combinations thereof. So the question that I love to ask is, well, okay, beyond making money, which is the lifeblood of any business, why form a business to begin with? And if it's just for profit, then you're likely going to be exposed. So the work that I do within organizations is to help them identify that purpose and really instigate it within and infuse it within their leadership team, their culture, and to the brand. So an example of that might be the Port of San Diego, which is one of my clients. And so we did a big brand evolution program for them a couple of years ago. And the port really asked themselves the question, well, what are we responsible for? And not to get into the too complicated story, which is, you know, essentially the simple version is that the Port of San Diego is a land grant here in California, 55 miles of waterfront that stretches five different cities within San Diego. What are they really in the business of? And what we determined through that work is they're in the business of stewardship, protecting that 55 miles of waterfront, making it prosperous, accessible, and safe and sustainable for future generations so that San Diego has this lifestyle, or the Port of San Diego's and all the elements that the port touches has this sustainable life force to it. So there's everything from harbor police to environmental issues to art issues and real estate development, things like that. All of them revolve around this singular purpose. And then, you know, that's a very simple way of talking about what I do. But as you can imagine, it's incredibly complicated, especially when you think about the complex world of the Port of San Diego.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. When it comes to other businesses, what are some problems that you help them solve, you know, kind of internally? I mean, this is a lot of kind of introspection. There's a lot of going, hey, why are you here? Maybe questions. But what are some things, you know, that you help them solve that helps them make a tangible impact on the consumer end?
Yeah. You know, I think everything starts with culture first, right after purpose. And when an organization really understands, well, if we're going to achieve what we're setting out to achieve, how are we going to do that? And what is the team that's going to be involved in doing that? So I help them identify who are the right people who should be lining up and coming in within that organization to contribute to the purpose or to the cause at hand. And what I help them do is understand what is their value system within that organization so that they attract the right kinds of people. And those people, by the way, could be the employees of the organization or attract the right kinds of customers. So one of the things I talk a lot about is the attribute of magnetism in the world of marketing. I don't believe that, for instance, clients should be chasing customers. I think they should be attracting customers. So you think about like a brand like, I don't know, Tesla or Apple, like some of these very, you know, amazing brands, even Harley Davidson, for instance, they attract people who believe in what they're doing and they don't go chasing customers. Yeah, they do marketing. They certainly have a sales team and they have retail offices and things like that. But when someone decides that they want a Harley, they want to ride a Harley, they want to be involved and drink from the cup of that particular lifestyle, they're all in. They just want to be within that world. And so the people that work for Harley, as well as the customers, they belong to that organization. And there's this because of they know what they stand for and they articulate and express that belief system. They then attract and magnetize the right customers and they create belonging within the communities that they work within.
That's a great point, is belonging, you know, building the culture, building the people, whether it's the customer or the, you know, employees of that organization. One of the things that, you know, we focus on this show is scaling your real estate business, and especially starting out early. A lot of these, and I have plenty of friends who are doing very, very large hundreds of millions of dollars a year in real estate transactions, and they're still a light team. You know, they may be anywhere from 6 to 9 people and that's it. So at what point in time this should someone be thinking about this and building that kind of internal culture, if you will?
Oh, I think, you know, you can do it with a one-person team. I think there's no better time than now to start. And, you know, the minute you have an idea for a business, even if that is in real estate, and one of my clients, by the way, is a big real estate company that's based here in San Diego, but they have offices across the country. They don't even consider themselves in the real estate business. They're in the lifestyle business. They're actually creating homes and workplaces for people. And, you know, so the people that when they think about who they want to attract inside their business, regardless of where they are in their journey, they're thinking about how do we bring people on that are involved in helping to create the lifestyles that the real estate actually does. When you think about like, what is a building? A building is just a building that's made of the same materials that every other building is. But what's going to differentiate your set of buildings, your real estate investments or communities or whatever? In this particular case, they run communities. What's different about those communities? It's the people that work for the organization and are aligned through their value system at this particular real estate company that makes the world of difference. So the difference in their world is they've got a line of people that want to work for them, believe it or not, in the real estate industry. And they've got customers or community members who are long-term committed to being within those communities because they're treated like family. And they're propped up and treated in such a way that this level of service that they provide from the people within the culture that they attract creates just exponentially beautiful communities. And I think, you know, there's no better time than now. Even a small team, you mentioned like a team of 6, 8, or 9 people. Great. I think those people being sort of circling the wagons, being aligned in why we're doing what we're doing, it will create exponential results for the team, regardless of size.
What are some exercises that you take people through that really help them define that?
Yeah. So one of the exercises that I love to work with people on is when we're coming up with core values for the organizations, the first thing I tend to ask them is, tell me some stories of your employees when they're at their best. And this could be somebody that still works for the organization. So let's say, Sam, you're an employee of the team. And Sam did this thing when this particular customer had this big issue. Let's say it was a fire at one of the offices that we own. So Sam showed up and went above and beyond. And there's a story behind that. And so when Sam showed up and did this thing, and now it's called the fire story, and everybody talks about the fire story, every organization has these stories of people when they show up at their best. All we do is capture what those stories are and deconstruct. Well, what are the character attributes? What are the value system attributes that go into making that story great, retellable? And Sam, and a shining example of what a great employee can be for this organization. And we just share those stories so that people understand when we're at our best, usually when stuff is happening, like, you know, a crisis or something like that is actually showing up, that's when our real character shows. So by capturing those stories and retelling those stories, we begin to understand the value system that sits behind those things. And sometimes we can actually then identify, here's the top 3 values that we have within this organization. Integrity is non-negotiable. Showing up when people need it. Going above and beyond. Like those types of things that are unique to each organization come from the stories that we live and that we want to exemplify. And we do this in our broader US culture as well, or Western culture. We share stories from movies and things like that that express the, you know, the ideal elements of our character. And so we as humans, we have no defenses for really great stories. And so that's why I usually start with stories within a culture.
That's brilliant. I think that's a really unique angle. I mean, because a lot of times I feel like, you know, you sit around a big table and there's 8 people and you're like, okay, so let's redefine or let's define our core values. And everybody's just going, I don't know, we do great stuff, right? And it just winds up, you're like, okay, this is going to take a while. So I love that idea of defining, you know, core values from story. I think that's a really unique way to do that. So purpose, culture, you know, people within that culture, what else? What else do we have here?
Well, we could talk about beekeeping, and, you know, so it's kind of interesting if we want to bring bees into this. One of the things I've learned massively about beekeeping is that first and foremost, you're really just a steward for the bees, right? And there's a whole bunch of stuff that we can learn from how bees operate as a very, very productive society, which is sort of a great metaphor for how organization works and shows up and bees productive in what they do. So a couple of things that we can glean from that. So it's all women except for men, which are only used for mating. So what the women do, is there's a queen bee, and we all know this, is that she sets the tone for the hive. So if she's a feisty queen, then the hive will carry that particular attitude. If she's a calm queen, then the hive will carry that particular attitude. So as above, so below. And so the attitude of that particular leader, if you will, sets the tone for the entire hive. And then every individual within the hive has their own unique role, and they're experts at that role. So what they call the nurse bees are experts at nursing new bees that are hatching within the hive. Then there's like finder bees that are the ones that go out and they're finding locations for pollen, and they're bringing back through these little dances that they do this precise location where there's a big set of pollen. And then the gathering bees go out to these locations and they bring back. And then they have this great role called the inspector bee. And I've never seen this truly in an organization. So they're kind of part greeters, like you go to Walmart or something like that. You have the greeter that's there, but they go beyond that particular role. So it's like welcoming the bees back into the hive. It's also protecting from other hives that are trying to bring either steal the honey or, you know, steal the stores that the hive is there. But they're also welcoming the bees back in and checking them for things like disease and mites and stuff like that. So they're like welcoming them, they're inspecting them, and then they're bringing them back into the fold and creating belonging within the hive organization. And so each individual or each group of individuals within the hive has their own particular role, and they stick to that role and they become experts at that role.
That's fascinating. I mean, one, just from a purely awe standpoint of going, this is the way bees function. This is crazy. But also, you know, using that as just a blueprint to how to establish an effective organization. I mean, there's so much to learn there. You said you hadn't yet seen the inspector role inside of a business, other than what you use a Walmart greeter. How would someone, if you were to envision that or enact, you know, inside of your own business, if you had 100 employees, what would that inspector role look like if you could have it?
I think they would lead what we currently call HR. So they would be kind of the person that's in charge of the culture, setting the tone for the culture, but also welcoming new members into that organization. So as we all know, like, you know, let's say, for instance, you get married and you join a new family, how you're welcomed into that family creates your sense of belonging there. I believe that this particular individual or team of individuals should be ingrained within the HR team, human resources, that could greet and create this sense of connection and belonging, not just on the employee journey prospect of, you know, when someone's interviewing and going through the process of training and onboarding, but how do they get treated as they're ready for that next level? How do they get trained when they go from one level up to a managerial level? How does that HR team actually nurture them to be ready for that next role? I believe that greeter person could also be a nurturer that helps journey the employee along in their process to help them grow as individuals, because we all know we want to grow as individuals. We're constantly learning and we're going to outgrow our role. If we have good mentors on our teams, then the one thing that as a good mentor that I want to do is I want my people to advance. And ideally, if I'm training them, I want them to advance within my organization and not go somewhere else to find their next home. I want them to advance within. And so that greeter could also be that person.
That's fantastic. I love that. That's a great role to envision, and certainly something to think about. Stephen, before we run out of time here, let's talk a little bit about your latest book. Can you give us some insight on that? What readers could expect to get out of it? And you know, just give kind of pull the curtains back on that if you can.
Yeah, good. Thanks for asking. So the book is called The Beautiful Business, and the subtitle is An Actionable Manifesto to Create an Unignorable Business with Love at the Core. So what's a manifesto? A manifesto is the act of coming up with a new set of values and then bringing that out into the world. And I think this is the core attribute of what it means to be in business. You know, once we cover off in the checkbox of we're going to make money, we're going to make profit, and then we ask ourselves the bigger question, well, why are we going to do this and how are we going to improve the lives of people? So a manifesto is this act of we humans getting utterly creative about living in the world of possibilities. We have an idea. We have this, you know, this vision for what the business can be, coming up with a set of values and purpose, and then bringing that into fruition, manifesting that into a real live boy, you know, no longer Pinocchio, this wooden thing, but an actionable business that actually improves the lives of people around us. So in the book, I talk a fair bit about what the role of a leader as an artist can actually be. And by artist, I don't mean, you know, to be a painter or anything like that, but the practices of artistry, which has to do with landing the plane of the ideas that we have and making those things in a manifest way that improves people's lives. And this is truly an act of imagination. And so the beautiful business challenges all kinds of assumptions about, you know, the first order of business is all about profit. I believe businesses should be playing the long game of business and not the short game of business is quarter to quarter profit or profit at all costs. The long game is investing in your people, investing in your organization, investing in the systems and processes that you have, and investing in the customers so you have loyal customers and long-term customers. And so beautiful business is all about orchestrating the elements that infuse not just brand, culture, but also business strategy connected together to create a business that actually improves the world.
That's fantastic. I look forward to digging in on that. If our listeners want to get a copy of that, where's the best place to find that?
Yeah, the book website is the-beautiful-business.com. You can go there to order a copy, or you can find out about it on my core website, which is matterco.co, M-A-T-T-E-R-C-O.co.
Fantastic. Stephen, I've certainly enjoyed this today. You've given us a lot of insight and things that, I mean, in the real estate side of business, we probably just don't think about. You know, that often is what culture means, what it means to take the long game, to invest in processes and systems. You know, there's a lot of things here that we've gotten to talk about today, and I'm certainly appreciate it, especially not the least of which is how the lessons we can take from the humble bee and what it can teach us about business and life. So this has been lots of fun. Thank you so much for coming on today. If our listeners want to get in touch with you, I know you mentioned the website there for the book or learn more about you. Is there any other resource, or would that be the best place to get in touch?
Those are the main places. Thank you, Sam. Really appreciate you holding the space here today. Love what you guys are doing.
Thank you, Stephen. Have a great day.
All right. Take care.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much, and hope to catch you on the next episode.